This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome back to another edition of the Extra Bases podcast on the Yak.com. I am, of course, Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com. This is episode 67. And as you guys know, this is a very college baseball, Texas baseball centric podcast at the Yak, which means you Texas baseball fans are in for a big treat today, because I'm happy to say I'm joined by Texas pitching coach, recruiting coordinator, Sean Allen. Sean's been with David Pierce for a long, long time and has now been at Texas for a while as well. Sean, first off, thanks for taking the time to join me. I know you guys are trying to make best of the situation you guys are in, like everybody else. I just saw the recruiting period, dead period was extended through July and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, now that you've kind of been in this new grind for a couple months, what's kind of the day-to-day operation been like for you in your position now that, hey, the season stopped and you guys are kind of limited to what you can do right now?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Dustin. It's, you know, you do a great job of covering us, and appreciate you having me on this podcast. But it's been different, that's for sure. It's, you know, a lot of video stuff. You know, the grad transfers and all the portal stuff has kind of kept us busy. You're always trying to maximize your roster every single day. And I think that's been the biggest goal, is just, you know, not push the issue, but, you know, not be behind on some guys that might be pop up here and there. Obviously managing your own roster and your own team right now the best that we can with what we can do. It's been fun to hear some of the guys that we've had on our Zoom calls and all that with our team, just to pick, you know, big leaguers' brains, GMs, you know, big league managers. That's been a lot of fun just to hear their side of it and how they've been handling stuff right now. And our guys have been getting after it. It's been fun to see them, you know, just listen to what they're doing and getting creative, lifting in the garage and, you know, building weight equipment, stuff like that, just to find ways, because they're definitely – it's a high motivated group. So I don't think we have to worry about that side. The recruiting piece has been really different, and it's going to continue to be different. So we just got to adapt and move. And, you know, I think possibly it slows some things down with early commitments and all that, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah. You mentioned the early commitment aspect, and it's, you know, something I've touched on here before. And I, you know, when Drew was on here, something we got into a little bit as well, but baseball is unique in that so much of the recruiting is done seemingly years ahead of time. You know, it's not like football where the really, really good players might get recruited for multiple years, but most of those guys are kind of in a year, year and a half, 2 year cycle. Whereas baseball is so far kind of out ahead of things. So, you know, is this like a time to do film? Or are you kind of just calling around to do background work? I mean, I feel like this is, you know, once you guys would eventually wrap up playing, which if all things go well, wouldn't be until June. So you guys wouldn't really focus entirely on all the roster management stuff until after June, probably in July and stuff like that. But I feel like we're getting to the point where I'd have to turn on alerts for tweets from David Pierce, because there's probably commitments coming, you know, just fast and furious throughout the summer. So how has that kind of changed the way you guys have, I guess, evaluated? Because so much of what you guys do is tough because you're having to look so far out ahead in the future. Is it just kind of more background? Is it just more film? You just kind of calling more people to try to get a feel for these guys? And I guess the other part of the equation, too, is you got to kind of figure out how to juggle all the numbers as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing right now is all the numbers. I mean, this 2020 class that we've, you know, put together, it started, I mean, the first summer that we got the job at Texas and went out. I think Aaron Nixon was the first guy that we committed in this class, and he was a freshman in high school. So, and I believe that was our first summer that we were recruiting for Texas and had the job, and he was the first guy committed. So, you know, that's the hard part, is, you know, you have to project so much. And I don't think people probably realize the juggling act. I feel like I should be in an accountant because just trying to piece numbers together. And
yeah, by now you should have a minor from Texas in like advanced like statistics or accounting or something like that.
I'm definitely not that smart, but when it comes to figuring out how do we get a percentage here, a percentage there, you know, over my years, it's you can definitely get, I want to say creative, but it's you definitely have to have an open mind and try to figure things out. You know, just simple as the way you offer, you know, how you write the scholarship can either help you a lot or hurt you. And I don't think people even realize that. Just, you know, just when tuition changes, we don't get, you know, the updated tuition numbers and housing numbers and all that. Like, we literally sweat that day out because we don't know if that's going to take a kid from, you know, just a simple number, 50%. It could take him to 49% or it could take him to 51%, you know, and you multiply that by 27 people and you're looking at, you know, either being getting 27% back or losing it, you know? So that's the hard part about it all is you just never have clean cut. Hey, this is what you have. This is what's going to happen. It's always a juggling act and something that, you know, we have to do as baseball coaches. Everybody in the country has to do it. So we're definitely not complaining. It's just different than your typical football. Hey, I need to replace, you know, 15 players and I got 15 fools and go out and find the best 15 guys that fit for what you need, you know? So that definitely comes into it with baseball, just the juggling act and trying to figure it all out. This year is just totally unique with the 5-round draft. You're projecting guys, you know, really before they show up, when they show up on campus as a freshman, you're going, okay, is this guy going to sign or not when he's a junior at Texas? And you've got to have a pretty good guess at that point in time because you're already working on that recruiting class to replace him. So that's the hard part. And the unique thing about this year is, you know, all of our juniors that are on our team 3 years ago, we're kind of projecting whether or not they're going to be a draft pick as a junior at Texas and taking a wild guess on whether they sign or not. So it's been interesting for sure.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, it's a good thing, bad thing in that, you know, you guys could get more talent back. I think college baseball as a whole, because of this shortened draft, could stand to have a real influx of talent in kind of a 1 year span that would carry over for a couple of years that maybe it hasn't seen for a while because there's only 5 rounds of the draft and what that might do to kind of those borderline high school players and those juniors that were going to go top 10 rounds or top 12 or top 15, but won't go top 5. So on one hand, it's a good thing to potentially have that much talent back. But as you mentioned it too, this has been such a unique situation in terms of juggling, you know, it's not just, you know, for people listening, they hear the 11.7 and things like that. Well, it's not just the 11.7. It's like, I know the seniors don't count, but you've got all these other sort of roster limits and the travel roster and the active roster and all those sort of stuff. You know, has this presented kind of a unique set of headaches to where, man, looking on paper at potentially what our roster could be, this is great, but we've got to figure out how to make this all work in terms of the numbers and things like that. I imagine you guys have probably spent a lot of your conversations just trying to put your heads together and say, how do we make this all work? Because like you said, this is a very, very unique situation, not just because of the seniors not counting, but because of the draft. You know, it could send a lot of guys back to school.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing with college baseball is the draft at a place like Texas, you know, your power five type schools, I don't think it really affects a high school player that you have signed because, I mean, maybe a little bit because, yeah, they could take money 6 through 10 and draft a kid, you know, in the 7th round, a high school kid, and turn around and give him $3 million. That definitely changes, but you're talking 1 or 2 kids in the entire draft that's going to affect. The biggest thing it's going to affect is the other juniors on your team. Those guys, you know, that were probably signed as a 6th through 10th rounder. You know, guys that have the degree, they you know, get a pretty good chunk of change to go out and start pro ball. And those are the ones you're going to get back in college baseball, which is going to make rosters really deep, you know, throughout college baseball. But it also makes a big juggling act with trying to piece and put together the best roster that you can. And also just do what's right for the kid and families and you know, kind of live up to what you've told them during the process, whether they're on the roster or a recruit coming in. Like, it's just a unique time, and hopefully we can get through this. The hardest part with it all, Dustin, is we don't know. Like, we don't know the draft. We don't – there's a proposal out there that is going to allow us to go from 27 guys on money to 32 and have an unlimited roster. So, like, at the end of the day, we can't really make a whole lot of decisions right now because we don't really know what our caps are. You know, we're the only sport out there that has a cap. With how we can spend our money and the roster, you know, limitations that we deal with. And we don't even know that because they're supposed to talk about it, you know, now sometime in June and see if they'll give us a little, you know, waiver for 1 year to, you know, increase from 27 guys on money to 32. And then also the roster limitations that we have, you could have as many guys you really want, on their roster. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And that's been the hardest thing. Like, we can talk all we want, but we don't really know until after the draft, until they make that decision on those rosters on which way we need to move and put things together and figure out what's going to be our team next year.
And speaking of not knowing, yeah, I think that you guys, and I'm sure many college programs are just kind of in limbo until you see how this draft plays out. And then when they kind of reconvene again about the roster limits and all those sorts of things. But I know you spend time, you know, talking to advisors, players, obviously, including your signees, scouts, you know, scouting directors. Have you found a consensus for how people think this draft is going to play out? Because I haven't, you know, just generally speaking. Like, I feel like one person says, oh, it's going to be college heavy through and through. They're going to leverage these guys. They're going to go under slot. And then somebody else is like, they're going to take all the top prep guys that they've scouted extensively because those are the only guys they really saw and they feel more confident about them. Have you gotten a consensus at all for, like, okay, this is how I think the draft is going to play out? Because everybody I talk to is kind of – I feel like I get every end of the spectrum and nobody really knows for sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think if people are telling you they know what's happening, they're just straight up lying to you because – I don't think scouting directors know what's going to happen at the end of the day right now. And obviously they're going to have a plan and, you know, have an idea going into it, but, you know, I've never done it, but I would think that, you know, a guy taken or a guy, you know, you have a 15th pick and you know who you want. And all of a sudden a guy that you had, you know, ranked 12th is available, you know, things are going to change because, you know, the draft has always been a crazy thing to me. It's a funny animal every single year, and every year is different. You know, you see a kid that everybody's thinks going to go back in the second, third round, goes in the first round, you know, and they're working deals to do this. I would think at the end of the day, if you have five picks, you've got to hit on two guys. And there's eight new scouting directors in Major League Baseball, and this is their first draft. So I've heard that's going to play some roll into it, and I think that's one of the reasons everybody says it's going to be heavy college, because they don't want to take the risky high school kid that, you know, might not pan out 3 years from now. The kid's not playing well and he's out, you know, that scouting director's out of a job because, you know, he took a risky pick and the kid didn't pan out. So I think it's going to be really interesting, and I think teams will try to get creative to maximize those five picks and get the best players that they feel like they can. You know, are you going to see a senior sign type guy go in the fifth round and sign for $10,000 and that turns around and gives them a lot of money to sign their fourth rounder? You know, a guy that maybe slipped in the first or early second round and he's still there and they draft him in the fourth and, you know, save some money in the fifth by taking a senior and giving him, you know, not a whole lot of money. So we'll see. I think right now nobody knows. I think the agents and stuff that I've talked to, the other thing that they've had a hard time with is you can't go to games and watch your player and see which scouts are there scouting. Like, that's a big thing this time
right,
of year.
Right, yeah, you absolutely.
Know, late in the year, conference tournaments, like, all right, what teams are there? Which team has the most heat in there? You know, or scouting directors coming in to watch a Bryce Elder. Like, which team is that? You know, cross-checker, like – that means they like this kid and they're really in the mix. And now it's just done by phone and these agents are having a hard time figuring out really who's hot on the kid and who's not. So it's going to come down to those 2 days, and we'll see how it kind of plays out.
Yeah, if you want to figure out who's going in the first round on normal terms, you just kind of figure out has a GM done an in-home or gone to one of these games recently for these guys? Because if he has, that guy's going to go in the first round because they don't make many of those visits at all. Yeah, I just, you know. It's kind of weird now, too,
because I've heard there's a lot of teams doing Zoom calls with every kid they've turned in the top that they have a top five round grade on.
Oh, boy.
You know, and I don't know how many teams are doing it, but I have heard a couple. But, like, you're meeting with front office people, you know, a high school kid that the area guy has turned in as a top five round talent. That doesn't mean I know of a kid that, you know, a couple kids that have done these and they never talked to the cross checker, you know. So is that kid really in play? Probably not. But I think they just have more times on their hand. And so they're just trying to learn kids and you know, spending their time on trying to get to know kids better, and they're doing a lot of work on, you know, these Zoom calls. So it's interesting to see how it all plays out.
Oh, I would love to hear some stories from some of these older veteran scouts doing Zoom calls. I love those guys. I sit down there during games when I can and stuff, but some of these guys I'm picturing in my head trying to do Zoom calls with these kids, and I'm just getting a funny image in my head. And speaking of those guys, too, I mean, on a more serious note, some of these organizations are kind of furloughing their scouts. And a whole wild card to me about this draft is, you know, you've got owners like the A's that didn't pay their rent on the stadium for a month and are not paying minor leaguers. And what if they show up to the draft, gets closer, and they're just kind of like, you know what, we don't have any money to spend on any of these guys, even though it's the cheapest form of talent that we can acquire. Like, then your poor scouting director is probably drafting a bunch of the cheapest, best college guys he has in the fifth round. They might just be all college because you just tell those guys, hey, what are you going to do? Go back to school and get, you know, $100,000 less next year. And yeah, it's going to be wild to see how that plays out. But kind of switching gears here towards, you know, the 2020 team that you guys had on the field for a little bit. I feel like we were kind of robbed, or I feel like I was robbed of seeing what this pitching staff at Texas could turn into. Obviously, I think that you were probably stronger in that sentiment because you are the pitching coach and you work with those guys on a daily basis. But, man, do you kind of just, when you reflect back to the season and particularly that pitching staff, do you kind of feel like things shut down just as you guys are about to really get it rolling? Because I think it back to like Bryce Elder, who I love, but I don't think he had a start where it all clicked yet. You know, Ty Madden was starting to show a lot more maturity on the mound and how to pitch and use what's working to get out to compete and that sort of thing. And Pete Hansen had a 0 ERA, and Dawson Merriman had that fantastic lengthy outing out of the bullpen in one of the final weekend series of the season. He was really starting to click as well. So you kind of feel like you were robbed a little bit of seeing, like, because this pitching staff seems like it had a real chance to become one of the better ones, not just in the Big 12, but maybe nationally too.
Yeah, I definitely think it did. I mean, I love every kid on that roster. The one thing that for me, and I've told a lot of people this and recruits that we're talking to now, like, this coming year, I think will be my 20th year in college baseball. And this is by far the most fun group I've been around.
Wow.
It wasn't because they're, you know, like, they're goofy and funny. They were just able to be themselves. And I credit, you know, them for creating that environment. And obviously Coach does a great job of, you know, doing that as well. But like some of these guys that came in this year, like, they were just a blast to be around. And I think the older guys kind of saw it and realized, hey, this is going to be pretty good. These guys work. They're talented. And it just worked really well. And I think that's the interesting piece. And Coach Pierce says it all the time. Like, that team will only be that team one time. And that's what's kind of frustrating with it is, you know, we didn't lose many games. And I would love to see this team, you know, go out and lose a weekend that we should have won and, you know, gone through some adversity. We obviously, you know, lost 2 out of 3 at Minute Maid, but, you know, the LSU, it's one swing of the bat. Bryce made one bad pitch. you know, and it ends up, you know, we're losing by a run, or I think it was a run, but it wasn't like we played bad. You know, the last game on Sunday, you could see the youth and all that, but I wanted to see us face some adversity and see what we did then. But other than that, like, it was a blast to be around those kids. Like, every single day I was excited to get to the park, you know, hang out with the position players in the dugout and listen to them talk crap to each other, and just the fun they had on the field. And they, that was the biggest thing for me. With, it was upsetting because it was a unique, you know, a bunch of, not a bunch of old guys, but some old guys and some young guys that really meshed really well. They could scream and yell at each other, call guys out, and they went home and they realized it was a team. Those were things they needed to do to make us better, and they just worked. And that was the fun part about it. The pitching staff was, I think, the biggest thing for us is when we pitch 18 guys or so in 17 games. So you could tell we were trying to find roles and figure guys what we really had. And I think we started to get a little closer to that. And I think as a player, once you have that role and you know coming to the park, hey, this is kind of my role on this team, it just makes you that much better. It makes you more comfortable. You kind of know what to expect. And I think that's where guys kind of take off. Dawson, he started to kind of figure out like, hey, you know, this is going to be me. Dre kind of knew what had going on. The impressive thing to me with Pete Hansen was he had no idea when he was pitching, you know. We didn't have a role for him. I know at the end of the day when he was ready and he was able to pitch, at some point in time he was going in the game because he threw strikes and he competes. And that's the beautiful thing about Pete. And I think once he got into the starting role, I think he would have just continued to flourish because of that routine. You know, a guy like Kobe Kubicek, you know, for some other reasons, but he didn't really have a role. And I think, you know, he was working to be that Tuesday guy and just go out there every Tuesday and have that set routine, which is going to be, you know, allow a player to be much better, I think. And it was fun. It was a deep, deep staff. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think we were pretty good because of the deep numbers. You know, if a guy went down with an injury, I think we would have been fine. And I think Bryce wasn't his best yet. You know, I think developing the changeup was something that was much needed for Bryce, but I also think it took away some of the consistencies of a slider because it's just a totally different pitch. Your hands, you know, in a totally different position, that release on the changeup versus the slider. And, you know, I think that affected the slider some because the changeup was so good. At the end of the day, the changeup was, you know, his best pitch for this spring, in my opinion, which was, it's hard to say as good as the slider is. It was the most consistent pitch he threw all spring. He threw one bad one the entire year, and that was the one that converted it out. So it was, you know, it was a fun group to be around. That's what I miss the most.
Yeah, just, you know, and from my perspective, like interviewing those guys and being around them and things like that, I mean, just you could tell with a lot of those guys the way they were carrying themselves. You know, a guy like Bryce is a great example, just his maturation from his freshman year to his junior year, and Ty being so much sure of himself, and Pete, I mean, Pete walks up to the first media, you know, breakout session he has after a game, and it's like the dude's been in the big leagues for 5 years, the way he's walking around. But yeah, it just was a fun group. I'm looking back at some of those numbers, and it's like, Kolby Kubicek's a great example. I think he had like a 2.97 ERA. But I'm like, man, you know what? He could throw a lot better once he found his role. And this is like, there's a lot of those guys, like they had really good numbers, but you feel like you're kind of robbed of seeing what they could become. Kind of along those lines, I know you guys and Coach Pierce and Coach Miller and then Troy to a lesser extent, but he hasn't done the recruiting as much at Texas as you guys certainly have. But how rewarding was it for you guys that have put in so much time recruiting these guys to see the makeup aspect of all these young players? And, you know, the young freshman class especially gets a lot of attention with that because there's just so many of them that came in, and so many of them that were able to kind of break through and grab some prominent roles immediately. But I know how difficult of a thing that is to evaluate and try to hunt and find. How rewarding was it for you and for the staff? Because I feel like even though you only saw 17 games, you saw those guys go through a fall, You saw those guys kind of in their element. You've seen these guys continue their work after the season's been canceled. How rewarding is it to say, you know what, I think we got it right with what we were looking for with these guys in terms of the mental makeup and the way that they carry themselves and they go after their work at Texas?
Yeah, I mean, it's really rewarding just, you know, because you've had, you know, a lot of these kids have been committed for 2 or 3 years. And, you know, I think we had a full cycle with this group and you're able to build those relationships. So I do think, you know, when they get on campus, they're more comfortable when they get there. Like, and I mean, the 2018 class, like, there's guys that were scared to death to talk to us, you know. They would not go into Coach Pierce's office. Like, they were scared to death. And I think, you know, having another year with this group and obviously building those relationships when they're still in high school, like, they're just more comfortable when they get on campus, which I think is huge for their development, for them to get in and settle in a little more. I think that's a big part of it. The other thing is, and this might sound kind of stupid or whatever, but I truly believe it, like, recruiting is luck. At the end of the day, like, you think you have a kid, you know what's going on. Like, you don't really ever know what's going to happen between the lines when that kid gets to this environment and has to go perform with the expectations that, you know, our tremendous alumni have set before. It's like, it's hard to do. And there's a lot of kids that just get there and they're just trying to survive and keep their head above water and not screw up. And most of these freshmen were not that way. Like, they knew they belonged and they were ready to help us win. And that's, you know, you can do every background check in the world when you're recruiting. The hardest part about recruiting is nobody's going to tell you anything bad about kids. You know, they're never going to tell you. And that's, we try to dig for that. Like, the high school coach, like, you know, most of the kids we recruit, yeah, they're the best player on their team and he's the hardest worker and he's the best teammate and all those things. Like, the summer league guy, like, it's hard to find people that are going to say, hey, here's the thing that he's got to get better at, you know? And so you don't really know those, you know, those issues until they show up to campus and you work through them, and every kid's got them, you know, they definitely do. But I think we definitely have the right guys with this group. And I think at the end of the day, they liked each other, and that made it so much better where they would grind through stuff. And we had some practices that were just really intense, and they get back in that locker room and it's left on the field. So it's definitely rewarding knowing how much time and effort, you know, our entire staff, not just coaches. I mean, Drew's so involved in recruiting, Carly's so involved, you know, when they get on campus, they just do such an outstanding job of, you know, getting them done. And getting guys committed once we can get them on campus. So it's it was fun. It was fun to see.
Yeah, as you said, you mean, I always tell, you know, people on our message board about these freshmen when they show up. I'm like, I can have an opinion. I could have seen the guy. I could have watched film. I could have talked to scouts, whatever. But you don't truly know how these guys are going to perform in a place like Texas until it happens. I mean, it's – I've seen the expectations and the weight of that place kind of crush some really highly rated freshman kids over the last 10 years or so. So yeah, I'm glad, but you have no problem at all admitting you got to have a little luck involved. Like, you think you know, but you don't really know until those guys get on campus and they kind of show you that they can handle it now, that sort of thing. And oh, by the way, what you guys are cramming your evaluations into, what, basically a month? 2 months, maybe?
Yeah, probably 2 months. And you're doing it at an age to where you just don't – I mean, they're 15 years old. Like, I remember when I was 15 years old, I was probably 140 pounds. Like, you know, like, I wouldn't have been a college baseball player at the level I was if recruiting was the way it is now. Like, I would have been bypassed because I was tiny, you know. And that's the – you know, the good and the bad, I guess, of it all. But, I mean, you take a kid like Andre Duplantier, and as mature, like, we loved him, but we had no idea he was going to be the type of kid that he is. We, you know, you have an idea, yeah, he's awesome, the family's awesome, and all this stuff, but, like, that dude's different. And, you know, it just, the makeup and the way he answers questions. Like at the end of the year, we have a meeting with him, and just some of his answers, you're like, grown men don't talk like this, you know, and like guys that have been through a lot, and he's sincere as he can be, and it's impressive. And he's a guy that, you know, and there's a bunch of others, but you're going to do everything in your power to make that kid as successful as he possibly can, and, you know, give him every tool, and because he's so much fun to be around. So, and that, you know, yeah, we signed him because he had a really good breaking ball, you know, to be honest with you. Like, we thought he had a chance to be offensive, and it was kind of hit and miss offensively. And he showed up on campus and was still that way. And he spends 2 days with Tulo, and the swing's completely different in 2 days. And you're like, wait a second, like, not many kids can do that. Like, that's different. And it's a credit to the kid and what he does, you know, and the way he works. And mentally, it moves slower. You can't figure that out in recruiting, you know. The game moves slower for him than it does most other kids. And that's why I say at times you got to get lucky with guys.
Yeah. If I would have told you at the beginning of the fall, hey, Dre is going to be one of your best hitters this fall, you guys probably would have looked at me like, wait, what? He's going to be on the mound. He's going to be, that's kind of what we're recruiting for. But I think that's one of the great things about college baseball is you get, you know, these guys that are kind of really talented two-way players, and, you know, they're able to kind of the game to tell them what they're good at. Just fortunately for him, he's good at both. But the game has a way of telling you, okay, this is probably your avenue. Whereas you don't really know in high school. Kind of speaking of which, did you ever go up to Trey and kind of nudge him like, hey, you want to go in the bullpen? You want to get back on the mound a little bit and help us out in the back end there? Because he was a guy that was a big time two-way talent. I remember talking to a bunch of scouts when he signed and he graduated. It's like, all right, hitter or pitcher? And it was kind of a split, you know, like, do you ever for fun to say, hey, you know, you want to go spin that breaking ball in the bullpen and get an inning or two?
It's more Trey coming to me. It'd be seventh inning and he'd, you know, I'm going to get a drink of water and he'd come up and nudge me like, hey coach, I got you. And I'm like, just go catch the ball at short. Like, just go catch it and throw it across. Like, and that's a, you know, honestly, like, those two kids had to be in the top five two-way players in the country. We just obviously, you know, with Trey's position and the, you know, the lack of depth and not really knowing. That's the only reason Trey didn't pitch this year was, you know, we had three shortstops come in and compete for the job. And to give Trey the best chance to win that job, we felt like we were deep enough on the mound to allow him to go do that. He's never been able to just go play shortstop and for 6 months at a time, you know, or 3 months in the fall. And he's never done that. You know, with USA Baseball, he bounced all over the place, whether it's short, second, he played first, he would pitch. In high school, they had put him in center field to protect his arm, you know. So he's never just really settled in and learned the position. Obviously, you've got a guy that's played at the highest level for a long, long time teaching him. And they hit it off right off the bat, and Trey's a worker, which Tulo loves, and it was a really, really good marriage with those two, and just allowing him to come in and earn the job, and he did. And I think at the end of the day we'll see Trey on the mound at some point in time, but we'll have to wait and see. And I think it's going to be based on rosters and needs, and because I'll tell you this, out of a high school kid, like, if I'm spending a couple $1 million, it would have been pitcher first for me, for Trey. But I think in 3 years, it's going to be really interesting because of the development on the position player side. And I think that's why it was split, because everybody just dreamed of that body and that athleticism running out there in the middle of the field. So he's a unique player. I think he threw one bullpen the entire time he's been on campus. It was about 80%, and he threw about 95% strikes, and it was like, okay, this guy's pretty good. But we'll see how it ends up.
Yeah, and to y'all's credit, I mean, obviously he wanted to be a shortstop, but, like, he got noticeably better. I felt like every time I saw him, whether it was either the fall or in the spring, like, he was a little bit better. You know, and people don't necessarily realize some of these guys, you know, they're like the kid in T-ball where you play them at pitcher or wherever the team's hitting the ball because they're just so good. They go around the ball and make all the plays. I mean, that's kind of how Trey was in high school. Like, okay, he'd come up with the biggest hit, or he'd steal the bag, or he'd get on the mound at the end of the game, or he'd play short or center or wherever you needed him to play. But once you take those guys and put them in one position and just allow them to grow, a lot of times the talent just really starts to show, you know. And to his credit, I remember seeing a guy early in the fall. It was kind of very contact-based approach hitting-wise. You know, there just wasn't really much impact on it. By the end of the fall, he was driving the ball out of the yard on occasion a little bit. You kind of started to really see that with him and his development throughout the season as well. And yeah, I think you guys got a really bright future with so many of those young players, and especially those freshmen. You know, one thing too, I'm a big stats guy, kind of more of a, I guess, an analytics nerd, for lack of a better phrase. And I'll never forget talking to you. I think it was before the season, or maybe before the fall, and Elder came up, and you had mentioned, you know, wanting to throw his curveball a little bit more because of just how strongly it rated in terms of, hey, when he threw it as a sophomore, it basically rated as his best pitch in terms of results. I mean, people weren't really putting it in a play at a high level. When they were, they weren't really getting hits off of it. When you kind of evaluate your pitchers and your pitching staff, when you're talking to guys like Ryan, you know, looking for the right types of statistics and all those things, what are maybe a few things that you really kind of pay close attention to, whether it's to help build your plan for a guy's start or when you're kind of evaluating your own pitchers? And I think everybody hears about, you know, the spin rate and all that sorts of things. Well, now it's spin efficiency and how the ball's breaking and things like that. Do you have a few go-to ones that you really kind of like to see with each guy to help kind of craft the way you develop those guys and the way you build those plans and things like that?
Yeah, I think there's two folds to it. Is early on, you know, we obviously had a lot of new pitchers, and you know, me being new to that side of the ball, I just wanted to figure out, like, what are their best couple pitches? Like, let's maximize, let's be really good at a few things. And then the guys that are more advanced, an Elder, honestly, he's probably the only one on our team that you can go, okay, there's four legitimate pitches in there that we can use, you know, over a course of a game. I'm trying to think, and he's definitely the only one, the four, and he added the fourth in the fall with the changeup. But the number one thing I try to do is, if a guy throws two seam and four seam, does he need to? Are they actually two separate type pitches? Does one have the ride and the hop, the carry on the four seam? And what is the two seam really doing? Or should we just master one of them? And Coach Pierce is big, huge. And you know, early in the fall, we would have some talks about it. And, but I think it's absolutely true, especially at this, their age of their development. Like, there's guys that want to do everything. And I think he saw that with Ty Madden. Like, Ty's going to get to the point to where he's a four pitch mix and all that. But like, does he need to do that to win games in Texas? No, he doesn't. And he proved that this year. It was forcing, I mean, it was probably 85 to 90% fastball slider. Didn't matter if a guy's left-handed, right-handed, or whatever it was. Like, that's what he was. And in the fall, he was trying to do too much. And Coach was the first one to point it out, and he was 100% right in it. And I think that's the first thing we try to do, is just go, okay, which fastball does he need to be throwing? You know, like Pete Hansen, he throws both. He's a little closer to having a plus four seam than he is a plus two seam. So do we need to be messing with two seams? You know, Jared Southard's one that he threw the four seam, he threw the two seam, he throws the curveball, he throws the slider, he throws the changeup, and it's like, okay, great, but have you mastered one of those? And so, like, me and Ryan will sit down and go, okay, is this guy closer to having a plus four seam or a plus two seam? Which way does he need to go? And I think that's the first thing that we do, because obviously the fastball command is big. And we want to, with the analytics, you're always trying to be an outlier, like get out of the curve. Like, all right, this guy, Sam Walbridge, like his two seam is the lowest spin sinker I've seen in a high school or a freshman at that age in quite a while. Ryan's done a lot of digging on it. And that thing, I mean, it's almost change-up type slow spin, which tells you it's got really late life. And it's like, okay, well, we don't need to mess around with four seam with Sam. You know, like, let's throw the sinker in the middle of the plate and let it work. And it's got a chance to be a plus pitch. So that's the first thing we do. And then obviously from there, you know, you start getting the pitch usage and, you know, can you make a guy's breaking ball better? And it gets, you know, really in depth and all that. But the first thing we do is just try to separate their fastballs. A Cole Quintanilla, he's got two separate fastballs. Like, it's four seam hop and he's got sink on the sinker, you know? So he's a guy that can definitely separate the two. Cam Fields is a little bit that way. He definitely commands a four seam a little better at times because there's times the sinker is just honestly too good. And he doesn't quite command it. So that's the stuff we kind of work on right off the bat.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, some of these guys, you know, these highly rated guys might show up to campus and I can throw, you know, four or five different pitches. And it's like, no, you can maybe throw two. Let's figure out your two best ones and then go from there. I mean,
it was really cool because we had Chris Archer on the other day talking to our pitchers. And like one of the first things out of his mouth was like, when I throw my bullpen, I'm going to master my two best pitches. I'm going to make better. And then I'll start dabbling and mess around with the other two pitches that I throw. But, like, guys, don't spend all your time trying to fix an average pitch. Like, master your two. And it was just – Coach Pierce has always believed in it. You know, I believe in it. And it was great to hear from a guy that, you know, so I think he's pitched 8 or 9 years in the big leagues and – has been pretty good at it. So we've got to continue to do that with some guys and just master, you know, those couple pitches. Cause at the end of the day, that's really all you need with the command to get college hitters out on a consistent basis.
Yeah. And I mean, he's kind of, you know, he's a guy that I follow the Pirates very closely and I feel like he's kind of a prime example of that. And that Pittsburgh was getting him to throw a bunch of two-seamers all of a sudden when he was almost a primarily four-seam slider guy. And then he ditched the sinker later last year for like basically the final 2 months of the year that he pitched before he got hurt. And his numbers got way better because he was throwing his two best pitches all the time. Like, I feel like if you ever need an example for your guys, I think just point to Bryce Elder, because what was he when he showed up? A mid-80s, basically a slider guy that just manipulated the pitch a lot, you know. Yeah. And then by the time he left, he was okay. I got a sinker, I got a slider, I've got a curve, I've got a change, and they're all distinct, but I couldn't throw all those things the moment I arrived, and I didn't need to necessarily get out at this level. I feel like that's got to be a shining example of this is how things can change year to year as a pitcher when you're adding things to your arsenal. But you can only do that when you're at a point where you've got to have your bread and butter type stuff you can lean on.
Yeah, and I think Bryce too, like, he would get into some bullpen settings and it was heavy change up and let's figure this out. And then, you know, I think that's why he lost a little feel of the slider, because he knew he had it in his back pocket most of the time. And, you know, it would get a little inconsistent this year. There was a couple outings that, you know, again, it was unhittable and he was really good. But, you know, I think he was – getting to that point to where he could, okay, get back to his roots, because the changeup was getting to the point to where he didn't have to consistently just grind on that thing to know what it was going to do and the feel of it and all that. So, yeah, I think that's why he would have taken off the second half of the year for sure.
Looking kind of big picture news-wise in college baseball, I know you guys probably saw it already, the D1 Baseball Report Kendall Rogers put out about this kind of proposed – new college baseball model. I mean, there's a lot in it. And just from just a schedule standpoint, well, I guess first, what was your initial reaction when you saw this? I mean, you guys are obviously way more in the loop than I am or anybody else listening. You guys probably caught wind or talked to people about this sort of model or whatever you want to call it. But what was just kind of your initial reaction upon hearing about this or reading about it? I think it, you know, I've talked a lot to Kendall about this. I think that you guys as college baseball coaches do the best job of trying to progress the sport forward. Whereas I don't think you kind of get that same element in football or basketball, where it's just so much more of a competitiveness or I'm trying to advance me or my program type of thing. Whereas college baseball coaches seem to kind of be on the same page about, hey, let's try to push our sport forward. And this was, to me, is another example of that. But what was just your initial reaction when you kind of first read about this or heard about this sort of new model?
I thought it was interesting because, you know, it's been talked about quite a bit. I mean, the last, I don't know, 5-8 years, they've talked about, you know, it was always the northern schools versus the southern schools. And there was no way it was going to get done because they were kind of competing against each other. So when I first saw it, it's like, okay, here we go again type deal. And then you start reading it and you start really looking at it. And the approach that they took this time is like, okay, it was, everybody said, if we played in summer, it was going to cost too much money to house the kids and feed them. Well, then if you really start looking at it, it's actually probably going to make us a lot more money. And so I think just the way they approached it on, hey, this is a moneymaker. Like, we need to do this simply to save money and to make more money. Bottom line, don't worry about north, south, west, east. Like, it doesn't matter. And I think it just makes a lot more sense. It kind of gets us in line with the pro model. It keeps us away from, you know, the 38, 40 degree nights at the dish and the north wind blowing in your face. Like, are you going to still have some cold days? Probably, but it's definitely not going to be as bad as it is right now. Basketball will be finished or really close to being finished. And I think it makes a lot of sense in my opinion. And the best time as a student athlete in college baseball is when you're done with the spring semester and you can go play baseball. You know, and I think it's just going to continue to help development because those guys are out of class, are able to spend a lot of time at the stadium and not worry about the academic piece that they need to take care of and go grind on the baseball field. You know, and I know as our staff, we've always been the best late in the year during that time for whatever reason. Whether it's, you know, been at Tulane or Sam, you know, Texas, we've always seemed like we've kind of taken it up a notch and gotten better during that time. And I'm sure it's just because the time the guys have to spend on baseball. So I like it. We'll kind of see where it goes from here, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I do too. And yeah, the financial aspect of it, you know, when people think of these northern schools and you know, you're right. It used to always be kind of a northern schools versus southern schools type thing about the schedule and whatnot and the haves and the have-nots. But you start looking at how much money these northern schools have to spend when they go south to play games on the road because they can't really play in the snow up there or they can't find the opponents or so on and so forth. And you start to look at those financial costs. It's like, wait a minute. They could actually be saving money if we started the season later, but especially from your perspective as a pitching coach, and you know, I mean, Dr. James Andrews was in this report, you know, agreeing with it. How difficult is it to get these guys ramped up for the season when you're just, you guys don't really have that much time? You know, it's not like you get, you know, 2 months to build your pitchers up before the season or like a Major League Baseball spring training. I would think from an arm health standpoint, this would be so much better for these guys to basically kind of cut down on the time they're throwing in the cold weather and whatnot, but also too, to give these guys more time to build up. So these guys are truly ready for the season when it arrives, as opposed to just kind of cramming everything in the final weeks before the season begins.
Yeah, I think right now it's a race to get ready and that's not good as a pitcher. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to, you know, we kind of calculate back their first start and, you know, kind of piece things together to go, okay, this is when we start throwing, your first pin starts here. But when you give starting pitchers 3 outings to get ready, you know, it's just hard. I mean, every game in college baseball means so much. Like that Friday night game, opening day, like you want to win that game. You've got Bryce Elder out there. He's got a chance to make some money in the draft and he's at 80 pitches in the seventh and he's going, coach, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. And he's only been up to, you know, 75, maybe 60, 75 in an inter squad the week before. Like the right thing to do is take that kid out of the game. you know, but it's hard, you know, they're competitive, you're competitive, you want to win. And it's, I think it just makes more sense of giving them, you know, those guys five outings. You're definitely going to be able to get their pitch, you know, limit a lot closer to 100 before their first time out. And just, I think it's better for the player and their health for sure.
Yeah, it just, I mean, when I saw James Andrews in there, I was like, whoa, okay, if you've got Mr. Tommy John himself in here kind of advocating for this calendar, that's going to mean something. And two, you know, just I feel like college baseball is just so close to kind of breaking through in terms of becoming a little bit more of a revenue sport, which, you know, fortunately, at a place like Texas, that's not a huge issue. But as we're seeing across college sports, I mean, there's already programs kind of on the lower scale cutting baseball and things like that. I feel like the sport is just, if it could just get a little bit more media eyeballs or television eyeballs or whatever, it could slowly start to become much more of a revenue type sport. And you think about the month of July. I mean, you're a sports fan. You're a big football fan, I know, and you're tuning into other stuff as well. But July for sports fans, there's like nothing. You know, there's Major League Baseball, and that's about it. They think like if college baseball could kind of grab like, you know, June and part of July, I would think that would kind of maybe get the sport closer to kind of taking off a little bit more as a revenue sport, because there'd be people that certainly want to televise that stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'll say this, like Coach Backage and the group that they, the committee they have together, Coach Backage, the head coach of Michigan, like that PDF that they sent out was, it was impressive. And they spent a lot of time and effort in putting that together and showing the numbers and getting Dr. Andrews and just, I mean, the effort they put into this deal was impressive. So it's got a lot of steam. I think the big question, you know, is the mid-majors and can they truly afford to house kids and all that? I know I've seen several on Twitter. There's several ADs in the South. I'm like, they like it. They think it's great. They think it's going to be much better for attendance. You know, you get a small town and, you know, you take Southeast Louisiana or in Hemmons, you know, and you get a early June, you know, Friday night game. Like, what else are you going to do in that town? You know, it's warm, it's nice. Like you're going to have families come out. And I think it could be a really big thing for college baseball all across the country. And I think you'd see our attendance, you know, increase on those, you know, those weekends. You're playing better teams and late in the year. And we always have better attendance late in the year. And I think it's, you know, a lot of fans are definitely supporting both basketball and baseball. And it just takes a lot of time for those families. And I think if we pushed it back, they could do basketball and then, you know, shift to baseball. And I think our early attendance would definitely skyrocket. And that's where the finance of making some money comes into place all across the country. So I think it's a step. Hopefully we can get it done and move in the right direction. So with that, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, just more exposure, I mean, potentially more scholarships, even if it's just a couple. I know that I probably say that and you dream of having one and a half or two more scholarships to use each year just because of the math. You know, I picture y'all just when the draft was shortened, I was thinking of y'all like, you know, what's his face? Galifianakis in The Hangover when he's at the blackjack table and all the numbers are flying around in his head. I'm like, that's probably Sean and Coach Pierce and Coach Miller and Drew trying to think of these numbers and juggling them in their head. It's like, I don't know. I don't know how guys do it. You know, it just cross their fingers and a lot of Excel work or something. I don't quite know. Well, enough about the baseball. Let's get to the important stuff. You've got quite the Instagram account, and I just recently stumbled upon it, which I don't know. I haven't spent much time on social media as I used to. But when did you become Top Chef? Like, when did you become Master Grill Man?
Because I've always enjoyed doing it, and then my wife is a social media connoisseur, I guess. I don't know how you say it, but
is she an influencer? She does.
Yeah, no, but she made me get the account. I mean, when baseball's over, I think, you know, I'd love to open up a barbecue place and we're talking names and we're like, all right, we need to get this on Instagram before they take it. If we use it, we use it, whatever. But we like the name Meat Sweats. And so that's where that kind of came up. you know, she does a lot of art and painting and some, you know, craft stuff that she actually, you know, a small business. And so she's pretty good at creating that stuff and kind of made me do it, so to speak. But I enjoy it. I don't know how good I am at it, but people seem to like the food and I like doing it. So we created it.
Yeah. And would you agree with me? Meat sweats are a real thing, right? Like that's,
oh, there's no doubt.
First yeah, time I ever tasted, exactly.
I thought I was going to throw up. There's so much meat.
Yeah. It's just, I remember first hearing the phrase in college, my buddy Clark would say it. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's like a real thing. Like there's gotta be like a scientific study somewhere about the meat sweats. But you talk like you're a novice. You're not. I mean, I saw the other day the reverse sear, and then you've got all the gadgets, and then I'm kind of, you posted something the other day and I was like, did you buy a grill from like Taco Cabana? I mean, I swear it looked like I was looking through the glass of Taco Cabana on the grill they have there. And like, you've got the goods. Like, you know, when did you really just, did you get addicted to a cooking show or something? Like, when did this thing really start to take off for you?
No. My dad liked to cook on the grill. You know, so growing up, steaks were a big thing for us. And I kind of remember that. But, you know, I think I enjoy the flavor of grilled food, whether it's fish, whether it's chicken. So I've always kind of, you know, have enjoyed doing that. I think the smoking of meat is kind of, you know, in the last, I don't know, 8 years, it's kind of really taken off, probably more so here since we've been in Austin. I finally got my first stick burner smoker where, you know, you use post oak, big logs and all that. And I've got four different grills and, you know, kind of use them all four. Honestly, there'll be times where I'll use all four of them during a week. So definitely overkill, but something I enjoy and kind of gets me away from these number crunches and it's my downtime.
I got to say right now, it's got to come in handy because it's not like you can really go out right now, you know, like I got to think you're probably thankful to have all that stuff to play with right now, since you can't really go anywhere or go to, I mean, I can remember the last time I went to a restaurant and just sat down and had a meal or whatever. So I got to think that's going to come in handy big time.
Yeah. It's been, you know, as soon as it started, we went and bought a freezer, and, you know, now that the meats are, you know, kind of restricted and all that, I've got a freezer full of stuff that, you know, I can cook and refreeze. I've never been a big fan of like cooking a brisket and freezing it, but the first one I did during this time, reheated it up and I was like, dang, this is actually still really good. So I'm kind of getting away from that. I usually just, you know, fresh, and when it was done, I'd give it away to people, whatever. But I'm definitely learning how to store it and do all that good stuff. And there's so many good barbecue places around here. It's incredible to me how they can cook 50, 60 briskets and each one of them tastes the same, because I struggle getting two of them to taste the same back to back time. So it's impressive. I got a lot of work to do, but I enjoy it. Between that and my grass, those are my two hobbies.
So you're the best cook on the Texas roster, right?
Oh, wow. Coach Miller's pretty damn good.
Really? Do you guys ever have cook-offs or anything like that, or taste testing? Like who's like, you know, who's, when you send the bat signal out that you're on the grill, who gets more people to show up to the house?
I'm closer. So you got to drive halfway to Dallas to get to his house. I think it's definitely, I'm much closer to our support staff and all that. So I think I win that just because proximity and 10-minute drive versus a 40-minute drive. But Coach Miller can flat out cook. Like, his Cajun food is awesome. He can really smoke. So he does a good job. We learn from each other. So it's fun.
Yeah. And you hear him talk. He just sounds like a guy that can cook, you know, like that, like that guy's got to be able to cook some good food, like just with kind of that little accent and that voice and stuff like that. Like, surely that guy's got to be able to put some good food out.
You got to make you guys some pastelaya. It's one of my favorite dishes. It's unreal. His mom can like really cook. He learned some of that stuff from her, and his pastelaya is phenomenal.
Yeah. Anything Cajun-ish or anything like that, I'm a huge, huge fan of. You mentioned the barbecue aspect. I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but what are your, some of your favorite ones around Austin, or like when you, you know, just when you're really like, man, I got to get something other than what I'm cooking. Like where are you hitting up in the area?
You know, Franklin's my favorite I've had yet. Obviously that's, you know, I would probably, a lot of people say that's easy to pick. I've only had it a couple times. Mickletwaite's is good. I like their beef rib. I thought the brisket the day I had it was good. I didn't think it was great. And then Black's is good as well. So I haven't had a ton. It's not like I've, you know, drove around in town and you know, tried a bunch of different ones, but I haven't had any bad barbecue yet. I'm sure there's some out there, but, you know, those three are definitely kind of easy. You know, if somebody's coming in from out of town and they ask about it, I'd definitely shoot them to those three pretty easy. So,
yeah, we do get spoiled around here. You can kind of throw a rock and go try something, and it's not gonna be bad. That's for sure. Well, before I let you go, because I've kept you long enough, you're not just a smoked meats connoisseur. On the Meat Sweats 3 Instagram page, there's tends to be some nice bourbon as well. What's your favorite one right now? Because I myself love kind of collecting and building my own bar and kind of trying new things. And it's actually a very, very popular thing on orangebloods.com. There's a group of guys that started just like a bourbon thread. And I think it's like, it's got to be over 100 pages long now. It's been going on for probably two or three years. These guys just talk about, you know, trying different things and different batches and flavors, and, you know, when they're on the lookout and they find things at a specs or something like that. So what's kind of your favorite one right now? And what's the best one that you've had? Like that best first either drink or sip where you're like, okay, this one's at the top of the mountain for me.
I think right now, you know, the Antique, the Weller Antique and the Weller 12 are really good. Obviously they're, you know, it's not something you're going to, you know, sip on, you know, one a night or something like that. The Old Forester right now is kind of I think it's a Barrel Select it's really good. Two of my favorites, definitely George T. Stagg. It's the most complex. But the one to me that just kind of, you know, you take it and you're like, all right, I need this, is, you know, any of the Pappy's 15 and up. The 23 to me is probably the best I've had. I think you're a 20 guy, but they're all just crazy good. So we've kind of gotten overboard over here with some of this. Stephanie likes to trade and it's more of a game, you know, and this stuff is getting to the point to where it's almost a savings account because this stuff is getting so pricey and, you know, so rare with some of these bottles. If you can get one and it's, you know, a couple of years, you're going to double your money. So that's kind of how we look at it a little bit. And it's a fun little hobby for sure.
Yeah, it's almost like collecting baseball cards in a way. You know, like I kind of feel like it's like I'm on the hunt for, you know, just every time I go to a Specs or a Twin Liquors or one of the local places near me that gets some good stuff. It's kind of like you're on the lookout. It's like you feel like you find the golden ticket sometimes if you hit it just right. And you're right. Like you look at the Facebook Marketplace and secondhand sales for some of this stuff and it's like, my goodness, you know, you might
You're talking, some of the stuff is 10-20 times retail.
You know
if you can get an allocated bottle for retail, it's, you know, it's that lucky day. And we like bourbon hunting. It's fun. It's a good hobby. And I'm definitely, from a drinking standpoint, I'm a rookie, but it's the collection and just trying to do the bourbon hunting, it's a fun hobby for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you're right. Pappy 20 for me is the one. My buddy let me try. He had that in his bar in Blanton's. And I blame him because I think I went on like a bourbon hunting rampage for the next 6 months after that. So it was all downhill from there.
My favorite for a long time. And it's still really good. But I've, you know, kind of gotten away from it a little bit, but not, you know, it's still probably in my top five.
Yeah, it'll the same for me. It'll always have a special place in my heart because I feel like I'll buy it anytime I see it. But yeah, if it has gone down the list a tiny bit, but still, it's whenever I'm cracking that thing open, I'm gonna have a good night for sure. Well, Sean, thank you so much, man. I've kept you for a while already. I know you're a busy man. getting things going with the roster management and preparing for the draft upcoming. I'm going to cross my fingers for y'all in the draft. We'll see how it plays out. I know you guys are you know, have your expectations in line for how that stuff usually plays out. But, man, like we talked about earlier, I think this just has a tendency to be like it could be a very, very unpredictable draft. And we didn't even talk about the deferred payments and all those sorts of things. Right. So it's not like these guys are going to get millions of dollars handed to them immediately. It's going to take a couple of years for that. But thank you so much for hopping on the podcast with me. Again, I know you're a busy man. You can follow Sean on Twitter. What's your Twitter name? Sean Allen 3?
Yeah, I think so.
Sean Allen 3, or you can, especially on Instagram, MeatSwitch 3, like one of the best Instagram names out there. If you get on there, you can see the whole reverse sear process, which I didn't even know that was a thing.
You gotta try it. It's phenomenal.
I'm really wondering how to do this. And Sean just like wrote a how-to guy for how to do the reverse sear. And man, like it made me want to lick my screen. Those images at the end of that reverse sear were just really, really good. But Sean, thanks so much, man. I hope you guys handled the quarantine process well. I hope that you guys are able to get back on the field or out to a field evaluating or whatever soon. You guys do a fantastic job, and looking forward to bright things for you, man. You're a rising star in this industry, and I know it's not too far off down the road that you're going to be running your own program. So when you do, years from now, you're going to have to come back on this podcast. We're going to have to talk again.
Well, I appreciate you having us, Dustin, and you do a great job for Texas baseball and keeping all of our great fans up to date with what's going on and kind of the inside scoop. And we appreciate all your hard work for our program. So appreciate it. Stay safe out there.
Absolutely. That's Sean Allen, recruiting coordinator, pitching coach at the University of Texas. I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com. Thank you so much for listening to another edition of the Extra Bases podcast at the Yak. Get to theyak.com, check out all of our great podcast content, and get to OrangeBloods.com to check out all of our Texas Longhorns coverage. And until I talk to y'all next time, take care.